the Fantasy Six Pack Hour with your hosts, Joe Bob.
Ah, you're awful.
And AJ Applegar.
It's a mouthful.
All right. Welcome to the Fantasy Six Pack Hour. My name is Joe Bond, founder of FantasySixPack.net. With me, new co-host for the week. Googly Bear actually showed up this week. What's going on, man?
That's right. Here in full force, ready to see everything that we have about the prospects in MLB. So yes.
And you've got a friend with you.
I do. This is Randall. that's also Randall
under
the Ass Man. That's not Ass Man. That is Randall Boggs. Back in his younger years, and the
no idea what's going on right now.
College days of Monsters University. For those of you familiar,
yes, very familiar. Good movies, but yeah, that's a new one, man.
Representing my awesome O's sign again. Thank you, lovely wife. My fireball sign is also a gift from my wife.
Do you have your new bobblehead behind you too?
Because I do.
I slapped
right
mine on there.
See,
I think I,
that.
Oh,
look
I see
at that
it
thumb
is.
Action. Look how good that is. Damn, should be hitchhiking right now.
Regular old Vanna White over here.
Right.
Yeah, that's right. All right, man. So you alluded to it. We're doing a special podcast tonight to review the MLB draft that occurred a few weeks ago. And we're going to have our good friend Chris Blessing on to join us here. But before we get started, just want to remind everybody, hit that like button, that follow button. Give us those reviews. 5 stars, guys, please. We appreciate everything that you guys do, and we appreciate you guys listening. So hit us back up. Anyway, let's get to it and bring on our guest of honor, Mr. Chris Blessing. What is up, man? Glad to have you back on. How's it going?
I'm doing well. How about you guys?
Hanging in there.
Fantastic. Can you hear me all right? I feel like I'm a little far away from the mic, so I need to project my voice more in the Googly Bear spirit.
I'm sure your wife is loving you yelling in the house right now, but that's cool.
She can't hear me.
Yeah, mine says she always hears like half the first of our show because she doesn't watch TV until like 30 or so minutes into it. She's like, oh yeah, I heard that part. I'm like,
she'll hear me because she's probably listening because she'll hear the Googly Bear entrance.
Anyway, let's just get right to it, man, and do our beer of the week.
Beer.
All right, Chris, guest of honor, what you got on tap tonight?
Yes, I have Highland Brewing from Asheville. Sorry, it's like I'm drunk already. This is really the first beer I've had all night. I picked this beer. It's called the AVL IPA, and the reason why I picked this beer is it's a tropical, juicy, citrus IPA from one of my favorite cities, Asheville, which I will be covering the Asheville Tourists this week as they play the Rome Braves here in Rome, Georgia. Nice. So figured I'd theme my beer at the store today.
I like it, man. I like it. Coming in strong. AJ, Googly Bear, what's up?
Excellent. I didn't tell you mine, so the one on the ticker is totally from last week. But
my bad. I didn't ask you.
I am
suck.
drinking Legend. Wait for it, dairy.
What are you drinking?
A Jackalope Brewing Company, Nashville, Tennessee, pint glass, but it is from Maryland, Bog Turtle Brewing, and it is the Papa Hoppa. It is the growler that I got, and about halfway through it, so should be fun.
All right, good stuff. I'm drinking another other half. Big surprise. You know, I told you I loaded up last week, so this is going to be a theme for a while. This one is a Triple Liquid Gems. It's an Imperial IPA. It's actually 10%, so I might be catching up to you soon, AJ. But no, this is a good one. I mean, I gave it a 4. I was expecting more out of this one, I'll be honest with you, but it's still pretty solid. You know, 4 is good for me. So,
yeah.
Cheers, guys, and let's have a good show.
All right. Cheers.
All right, man. So yeah, we had the MLB draft just a couple weeks ago, right?
Yeah, it was 2 weeks ago, I think.
Yeah. So, the one thing that stuck out to me in this draft before it even started was there was no locked in number one pick, in my opinion, and you heard that across. From a lot of people on Twitter, and like I don't follow it as much as you do, so maybe you thought there was a locked in guy, but I saw a lot of people saying that there, you know, there wasn't a locked in first pick. You know, who knew where everybody was gonna go? Like, do you think that was because there was just a lot of good players, like a lot of maybe elite players, or there wasn't that like elite player, you know, missing, and that elite player was missing from the draft, and so. We just had a lot of very, very good players at the top.
I think it's more the very, very good players at the top. I had Marcelo Meyer as my number one prospect in this draft. But, I mean, we had several prospects that were right around there, and you could have flipped a coin to really determine who was the best overall prospect. And I think that there's a lot of reason that there's reasons for that, I should say, and it's definitely somewhat COVID related, if that makes sense. I feel like our evaluation season was different than any other evaluation seasons we've come across before. For instance, we didn't have the college hitters that we normally have because a lot of the college hitters there, you know, we didn't see them in the summertime. Well, there was a lot of high school prep showcases going on across the country, mostly down here in the South, where COVID regulations were, you know, at times very non-existent. Those showcases gave teams the opportunity to have guys on tape, whether they sent scouts there or not. They had specifically prep hitters on tape. So they were a little further along in their evaluation when the high school season and the college season started. And we also saw with the college bats, except for a guy that we'll talk about a little later, Henry Davis, who was a Louisville catcher who went to the Pirates with the first overall pick. Most of our big bats from college actually disappointed this year. You know, we kind of saw guys that, you know, like Judd Fabian, who got picked by the Red Sox in the second round. I mean, he looked like a first round pick, top 10 pick coming into the season. And he struggled mightily with his timing for most of the early, I guess, 3/4 of the season. So for 3/4 of the season, he didn't look right. And so what that ended up doing was kind of pushing the sure things, the better bats back in this draft. And, you know, really and truly, we also had a bunch of good starting pitching out of the college ranks, but only really two of those guys were at the top of the heap, which was Jack Leiter, who went number two overall, and Kumar Rocker, who went number 10 overall. And the both Vanderbilt pitchers and guys, if you watch the College World Series, were guys that, you know, were, you know, had a pretty big audience and were well known.
If you follow the emblem on your hat there, they love those guys. They're phenomenal. I love watching the little clips on Pitching Ninja, man.
Yeah, for whatever reason, when I wear this to games, people think I am the dude, but I don't look like the dude at all, which is really crazy. I'm like, I'm just...
They probably just
like,
don't even know.
Yeah, and they're like, why are you wearing this hat? And I was like, well, I can't wear a hat that has an emblem for a team. And it seems like every Columbia hat bleeds through my sweat at games. So, like, you know, it kind of ruins the hat. So I've got to go with something. So I went with this nice thing from the fine folks at RotoWear, Maybe they'll send me something for that. I love RotoWear. Half of my baseball team t-shirts are RotoWear t-shirts. So good guys over there. Got to meet one of them in Florida, well, last year. But anyway, like, that is why the draft is why the draft was maybe not as strong up top. I think if you look at this draft in a few years ago, it's going to be a draft where a team is going to, I'll be honest, I think that the best player is somebody that is probably going to be in the third to eighth round. It's going to be a total surprise to people because we weren't able to evaluate them like, you know, every other draft except for last year's where we, you know, got cut off because of COVID.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And I mean, it kind of aligns with what I was kind of, you know, hearing the, you know, reading the chatter on Twitter about, you know, about this draft and these players coming in. So, yeah.
Yeah. So speaking of the College World Series, obviously, the next question we have here is, I mean, how much do the college stats really play a part in the evaluations of a player for the draft?
You know, a few years ago, I would be like, stats, whatever. You know, I want to see their underlying data. But, like, you know, you look at somebody like Will Bednar, who was a pitcher for Mississippi State, who was the winning pitcher in the final game of the College World Series. And, you know, I wasn't necessarily as high on him as some of the teams were as high on him. And primarily it was, I saw a two pitch mix. It was basically fastball slider and, you know, they played well both in rates and also performance. He was one of the better pitchers in the SEC this year. And I think that his, performance in the College World Series specifically elevated him from a guy who is maybe considered a top 40 pick to somebody who was in the top 20, and he eventually went 14th to the Giants. So when the lights are the brightest and the guy is performing, excuse me, I just burped some ABL here.
That's all right, but man. I do it,
hey,
from
that's
time to
the
time.
One thing you're not used to on this podcast is you're not, I'm not used to drinking beer and talking. You know, I think you guys get me, you know, well, hopefully you don't get me too drunk.
We're good. Don't worry about
anyway,
it. We've both been there.
But anyway, yeah, and I've been there. I've been there on this podcast before too. I mean, really, the big thing here is, you know, yes, they matter. It mattered for Judd Fabian falling to the second round, and I love that the Red Sox picked him up in the second round because I feel like they're one of the organizations that will where he could thrive in. I assume he signs. They're probably going to give him a pretty healthy bonus, especially since he's one of the few guys that has tremendous leverage in this draft, which is another factor that needs to be considered in this. Is because of the COVID year, we have extra years of eligibility. So he's a sophomore with essentially, you know, 3-4 years left. I mean, it's tremendous the amount of leverage a guy like Judd Fabian has to make have a higher bonus than you would normally see.
Yeah. It's always interesting because, you know, like, I'm more of a football prospect guy than I am baseball. That's why we've got you here for sure for this show.
I appreciate that.
You know, like, if you look at college stats for football, right, you're like, oh, man, this guy was amazing, you know. But like, how many times do we see like the Heisman Trophy winner just be absolutely garbage in the NFL because he's not a real pro player? Like, I, you know, I kind of wondered like how that kind of lined up with, you know, college baseball players to pro baseball players. And you know, you kind of went into that. So that was good. So you've already mentioned his name, Jordan Lawler. You know, he was the first pick of the draft, and we saw,
you mean
not him, sorry,
Henry Davis.
Henry Davis, my bad. Henry Davis, he was the first pick of the draft, a catcher. Last year we had Rossman, you know, catcher, two years ago. Yeah,
and then two out of three years though, it's like, where does,
but then like even from? 2 years before that, like I think with Joey Bart was number one, right?
He was number two, but I mean,
either way, they're like really high, like there. So why are we seeing catchers who, in my opinion, yeah, they're super valuable defensive wise, in my opinion, more so than anything else in Major League Baseball. But why are we seeing these guys who are going to give very minimal offensive stats, probably 49 times out of 50, go first and second so often lately?
Well, I think that it's, you know, in Bart's case, Bart was a player I saw a bunch at Georgia Tech with him just being down the road. And, you know, Bart was a good combination of a guy that you believe will hit for power in the big leagues with the catch throw ability behind home plate. So, like, it almost was a safe pick and for the Giants, even though it's a catcher. And then, of course, Rutschman's probably the best catcher we've seen since the Buster Posey days. And Joe Mauer even before that. Like, yeah, I hope so for you guys as well. You know, we're going to have our top 50 tomorrow or on Wednesday come out at the site. And, you know, on my list, he was number 3 overall for fantasy, which is really high for a catcher. And it was something that, like, I had no qualms putting him there because he's really, I think, the best prospect in baseball when you take away the whole fantasy part of it because of what he brings behind home plate as a catcher.
Be number 1 in fantasy lists.
Yeah. It's a little hard. I mean, Bobby Witt Jr. is my number 1. My number 2 is Julio Rodriguez. Guy. And, like, you know, I mean, you could make a case from 2 to 5 between Rodriguez, Torkelson, Rutschman, and even the injured C.J. Abrams. Like, I really feel like you could make a good argument there for any of them at 2. But it's hard for me to find Witt not being the number 1 guy just because he can possibly fill up 5 categories in regular format. But anyway, getting away from the question, I look at it as best player available or best player to work your draft. Going into the draft, most outlets had Marcelo Meyer as the top pick. For the Pirates, not top rated. Most sites had Jordan Lawler, who was I think my number 2 guy. If I don't have that list in front of me anymore. Davis made sense in this 2 reasons. Number 1, he was clear, like, far and away the best bat of the collegiate bat class this year. It's a weird setup. It's really kind of like, you know, he's kind of like a laid back guy in a crouch at the plate. He looks like he's almost sitting in a seat with an open stance. It's kind of wild. It's not, you know, you get so used to these cookie cutter stances. It reminds me of, I can't even think of the NES video game where they had a guy that was batting like that. But incredible plate coverage, hits the ball hard, makes hard contact, good exit velocity, has the power and stuff. He was clearly the best collegiate bat. And if you look at the Pirates organization, especially through trades, they've been making a lot of trades lately in the last 3 years. They've been getting a lot of toolsy contact. On my podcast this week, on the Eyes Have It podcast, I talk about Leovar Peguero, who they acquired in the Starling Marte deal. And, like, he's a top 100 prospect, but he's very, very – there's a lot of risks still involved. He's a 20-year-old in high A. There's some swing mechanic issues that need to be worked out for him to get there. So Davis and their previous pick last year, Nick Gonzalez, kind of they're different than what they're acquiring other places. They're proven college bats. And while Davis didn't have a Cape Cod season, he would have probably performed well there had he had one last season. So they were going for the best performer, best hitter. And there's also talk that maybe catcher's not his long-term position. He could be a guy that would produce at first base. He could be a guy that produces in left field. I think he's kind of limited beyond those two positions. But like there is a backup if it doesn't work at catcher. While, like, Bart, there wasn't really any backup. Like, you're buying the glove as well. And same with Rutschman. I think he could have probably played somewhere else, but you were buying the glove at 1-1. He was the best player of that draft 2 years ago. So I mean, that's my answer. I know I went off closer, but I wanted to kind of explain the Pirates' rationale a bit. And also, that cash savings, they probably saved a few million dollars. I haven't seen a figure come out. Let them afford other players later in the draft, specifically a third rounder who is committed as a two-sport guy in football, a Clemson guy, a Clemson quarterback and a pitcher shortstop who, for the major league purposes, for minors, is a pitcher, is Bubba Chandler from North Oconee High School here in Georgia. To be able to afford him as well as some of the other picks, they had a really strong first half of the draft and really and truly have put a lot of pitching talent, a lot of overall talent into their organization that they didn't necessarily have a couple of years ago. And they've done it through managing the draft, a la what the Houston Astros did the year that they took Carlos Correa and Lance McCullers in the first two rounds. We're able to pay them both as first round picks. I mean, that's a big deal.
Yeah, looks like Henry Davis got $6.5 million, and his pick value is 8.4. So yeah, they saved about $2 million.
$2 million. So, that's $2 million big. Will go to probably to Bubba, or Bubba. Yeah.
There's a lot of guys up top that went, cheaper, and I'm sure you'll get into that too. But it's all that I'm just using the MLB draft tracker to get that info. So anyway, let's jump into this. You helped me kind of mold this show. You've got your list of guys, and what we're gonna do is we're gonna break it down to different categories of players. And the first category of players we're gonna talk about here is kind of the all around category stuffers. I guess you want to call this like your five toolie guys, right? So give us your first guy here on your list that we want to talk about here.
Yeah, I picked Jordan Lawler for this, and the reason why I picked Jordan Lawler is he's probably he's a Texas kid. He's from the Dallas area, and the comp that got thrown around, and you see the comp, but it's a bit unfair because Bobby Witt Jr., who came out of the draft a few years ago with Adley Rutschman. I mean, we're talking about, that 2019 draft is fire. I mean, CJ Abrams is also in my top five, and that's three of the five top five guys that I have. But he was getting comped to Bobby Witt Jr., but I don't see that comp because I don't see an exceptional or a double plus tool in Jordan Lawler. I see, if everything works out, four out of five of his tools being plus tools. And in fantasy, that's a big deal because, he's drafted as shortstop. He's going to stick there. That is one of his 60 grade skills. And on the 20-80 scale, a plus tool is 60 or above. Plus is 70 or above. Witt Jr. has some borderline 70 type talent, especially with the hit and power, or not hit, run and power tool. Lawler kind of tops out. I think his hit tool has the ability to be a potential 300 hitter. I don't think the power is plus, but I've seen some outlets, and I've talked to a few scouting contacts that have had his power at the 60 grade level, which for me is, nowadays is about a 30 home run hitter. I have him a little back down, maybe in the 20-25 range. But this is the guy that this is the guy that's going to fill up several categories. And that's why I picked him and the other guy that I'm going to focus on for this as the two guys, especially in the first round, that fit this mold.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, another guy here is, we'll let you jump into him, the guy that was picked right before Jordan Lawler, and that's Colton Crouser with, again, the Orioles. So Orioles are stockpiling some good picks here, it looks like, so maybe that'll turn into something. What do you think about Crouser?
Yeah, a lot of people, I think it was a little bit of a surprise somewhat that they took him at five, but then it wasn't a surprise given that these guys have come from the Astros, Astros system, which was even, you know, you can all go all the way back to the Cardinals. If anybody has perfected getting the most bang for your slot buck, it is these guys. And so Kowser is a left-handed hitter. He has an upright stance. He's a spray hitter, and that's, you know, I like him a lot for those purposes. He's also a plus runner. He will also stick in center field. So in like formats where, you know, position is important or defensive skills, I mean, I don't play those leagues that often, but I know some of my subscribers do, and they ask me about that. So like those type of things are big deals. This guy rarely swings at balls outside of the zone. In fact, his O swing, which is, you know, his swing percentage on balls outside of the plate is extremely low. Like this guy does not expand the zone at all. And he's one of the few guys, even though it was Sam Houston State that performed this year, throughout the season. I do have some concerns. I think that his, while he has a spray approach, I think his power is mostly to the pull side. I did see some evidence that, you know, in some of the at bats that I scouted, that he can hit it out the other way, but it's almost by accident. I like to see him, kind of do what, Michael Conforto does. He's a guy that I'm really familiar with. That's why I'm throwing his name out there. A guy that can maybe ambush the gap the other way. And might be able to get a home run every so often that way. But, you know, primarily we're talking about a guy that's going to get most of his home run production to the pull side. I don't think that he is in Lawler's class in the sense that they're both, with the potential of being several plus tools together. But I feel like Kowser's the guy that has the most above average, you know, maybe the guy right below that can carry the above average bat stuffing category.
Yeah, and that average is so hard to gauge, I feel like, a lot of times, because it's just one of those categories. You just end up punting it. And in our league, you know, Fantasy Six Pack League, we changed it to OBP years ago because we were just tired of average. And you know, OBP is still something that you can't necessarily control and predict, but it's, I feel like it's easier to find guys that are better at OBP than guys that are better at
average. A little more predictable, but it'll be interesting. Like, I'm guessing by the time Kowser is ready to come up, Cedric Mullins won't be a thing anymore.
I guess that's interesting.
Cedric Mullins is playing crazy good.
He's been awesome this year,
and he's young too.
And then that's the thing is, like, when you're talking about the draft, you can't talk about who's blocking who.
Oh, of course, yeah.
We don't know the progression of these players. I mean, you could see Mullins moving off the position at some point, and, you know, who knows? I mean, he could be signed to a long-term deal, and this is the center fielder that saves his legs.
He could also get traded, because that's what the O's do.
Orioles trade.
Oh, we have somebody that's good. All right. Get him out.
But we're going to keep Chris Davis until he, you know, whatever.
One more year. Chris Davis, finally.
Sure, take it.
We got his bobblehead way over there on the other bookshelf.
I have
You're not on my show, buddy.
You don't want to jinx the other bobbleheads, right?
You're not on my show. You don't deserve it.
The other bobbleheads would, you know, get a doctor's note when they need one. So,
they just strike out a lot more. Anyway, let's move on here to the next category. And the next one we've got here listed is the best players that have a power hit tool combo.
Yeah. And this is actually, you know, the easiest because, like, we've already been talking a bit about Marcelo Meyer, and we've been talking about Henry Davis, and Henry Davis is also in this category. Right. But let's look at Meyer to start out with. And Meyer is, I think, in this draft is the dude that has the power-driven hit tool of the prep class. I think that there's some question with some other guys whether they're going to hit or not. Yeah, what was that? was that your bottle?
That was his growler. Yeah, that was the growler.
That's hysterical.
We're a professional show.
Don't mind me.
Yeah, I'm all right. Back to it, Marcelo Meyer. sorry.
No, it's all good, man. I'm laughing too.
I think what impresses me most about guys that have power-driven hit tools are the ones that seem to get to their power within their hit tool so effortlessly. And, you know, watching the showcase circuit this year, I didn't really have much video on him during the season. I had to rely on secondhand reports a lot for my evaluation on that. But watching him during the showcase season, which is going on now for the 2022 draft picks. They already had PG Worlds. They'll have the various different games like East Coast Pro and the one out on the West Coast too. But like, he was the guy that consistently, even in games, even against really good pitching, consistently got to his barrel. And like, I feel like that there's plus power potential with the chance at plus hitting potential as well. So you're talking about a guy that has the ability to be like maybe a 35 plus home run hitter with a high average, which right now we're all starved for that in our league.
So 280.
Yeah. Like I mean, yeah, 280, which I mean, by the way, in my dynasty league right now, I have a 280 or above batting average in it.
That's impressive.
I've been an absolute master over several years of creating the greatest dynasty thing, and hopefully they don't all get injured like Ronald Acuña. But like,
it's like my entire dynasty team right now.
Oh yeah, I mean, I have on this team, I have Bogarts, Devers, Acuña, Vlad Guerrero Jr., Starling Marte, who's one of my least guys with the BA, Adam Frazier for protection. Like, it's been that's a great collection, man. And this has been for years. This is a dynasty league, so like, it is it's been building for a while. So like, when we're talking about building for a while, I picked up Vlad Guerrero Jr. at this age. Granted, he was an international pick, but like, at the Marcelo Meyer age, and you know, dreaming on the tool set that it might end up being plus on both the hit and the power. So I brought that up not to just brag, although I'm going to brag. Hopefully I win the money for that league, because I'm not doing good in any of the expert leagues. I think this year I'm done with expert leagues. I'm not that type of player. Unless it's dynasty or keeper, I can't play them. But I bring that up for the point that any of these prep guys, you're drafting for 4 to 5 years from now.
I was just going
to
ask you that. Like, so when you take these guys in a dynasty league, like, okay, so especially the high school, the prep guys, like, you're waiting 4 or 5 years. Like, you just have to expect that. And so it's, if you're close to winning, if you think your team is close to competing, would you take a Marcelo Meyer over like somebody else who could help you in 2 years or 3 years, if that's where your window is?
Heck yeah. I just traded in one of my leagues, Marco Luciano, where I'm also competing. And the reason why I had him and why I targeted him was just for this instance. We're talking about a top 10 in baseball prospect right now.
Okay.
And I used him to get better for this championship run. You don't have to just use these guys like Marcelo Meyer or Jordan Lawler for 4 or 5 years from now. If you are competing, it's time to sell on guys. I have, thankfully, a deep enough minor league system, or I should, since I'm a prospect writer, who dabbles in this whole fantasy
game. I'm sure you are in a league with a lot of guys like you, unfortunately.
Actually, one league that I was in busted up this year, which was the RotoWire Dynasty League that James Anderson ran. And, you know, yeah, it was very unfortunate because we were even though we were ridiculed by a few of my fellow, not James. James and I are great. I have, of all the fantasy guys, him and Eddie from Prospects Live are my two favorite dynasty writers outside of Baseball HQ. But like, the thing is I got ridiculed for some of our roster decisions. Like everybody, I own this team with a RotoWire writer named Michael Rathburn. And
yeah, I know him.
Yeah, and Michael and I go back a long time. Actually, my mentor was his roommate in college, so it's kind of weird.
You have these random connections. Like,
I know. I have so many funny. Random connections. I have so many random connections. But that's how we became friends, was because of that. And I let him run things, and I let him, I learned from him. I learned from Rathburn. Rathburn's a veteran of all kinds of formats. And we built a really good team on guys that people didn't think were studs. And we did it with not much of a farm system, because I was in a league with people that, you know, went after guys a lot earlier than I would go after them. So guys like Marcelo Meyer are great pickups in these first year drafts, because whether you're a winning team or a losing team at the time, they'll have a benefit to you at some point, whether you get to keep them for all those 5 years, or, you know, the trade deadline comes next year. If you have a, you know, off-season draft, or if you have an in-season draft. And, you know, I know that there's some rules about trading, you know, guys this early in their career in some leagues. But, like, you know, I took advantage of it for Marco Luciano and ended up with Luis Castillo. And you know how he's been the last few weeks for the Reds.
Yeah, he's really coming on strong. I push it back in my rankings big time just recently.
Yeah, yeah. Ryan Bloomfield at Baseball HQ.
Another Hokie, by the way.
Another Hokie. You're correct. you know, Bloomfield has done work, a lot of great fantasy work throughout the years and stuff. Former Fantasy Writer of the Year. But he pointed out that Castillo is not a cold weather pitcher, which actually goes way back to when I saw him against Twins prospects several years ago in very cold weather. He does not perform as well in the first 2 months of the year. And, you know, if you're a manager, you know, on another team, you can take advantage of that type of thing. And, you know, I took advantage of it.
Thank you,
Bloomfield.
He was, that's great information to have. I just feel like he was performing so bad. Like, he was performing way worse than we've ever seen him perform. And it's just kind of what's going on? But yeah, no, that's great. Yeah. Kudos to Ryan for figuring that out.
Quite miserable. I was specifically looking for guys that were playing against him. So it's like, oh, that, all right. They've got to get at least two.
I mean, I was too.
Come on.
Yeah. All right. Who's the next guy
here? You mentioned Davis.
Yeah, I already mentioned Davis. I'll just finish that. Yeah, I'll finish that thought. Again, power-driven hit tool. Performer in college, was the only guy that met the expectations and maybe exceeded them this year of those top 15 picks that were in college. Mm-hmm. You know, Kowser was a guy that probably would have shot up boards quicker had it been for a Cape Cod League season or something like that. But, like, you know, power hit right there. I know catcher is a scary position, and I know people are adverse from, you know, picking these guys. But if you want the closest bat to the major leagues, it's probably this guy. And who really knows if he's going to be a catcher or not? Let's just be honest there. So,
well, hey, he'll probably have that eligibility at least for the first like 2 years.
Oh yeah, that will be
monster,
wonderful.
So, yeah, all in on that.
Speaking of awesome catcher eligibility that I took advantage of was Josh Donaldson. His like first year,
yeah,
he had third base and catcher eligibility in Oakland.
I don't remember that.
Yeah, I mean he wasn't Josh Donaldson that we know and love, you know, for at least, you know, what I guess like 60 healthy games. But it was phenomenal. I just picked him up. I'm like, dude, why this guy's playing every day? why is nobody figuring this out yet?
Well, like, I was like,
he's not a catcher. So yeah, it was great.
Yeah, there's been a few guys like that, but let's move on here to the next category of hitters, and this one is going to be the hit speed tool. So you've got a couple guys here, one picked up by the Brewers, one picked up by the Marlins, or Mariners, sorry. I'll let you share your names.
All right, so we'll start with the college guy, which is Sal Frelick from Boston College. He got drafted by the Brewers. I was on the Prospect Live simulcast of the draft, and it was kind of, you know, we all kind of agreed on that draft. It was really the perfect Brewers pick. It's a guy that, you know, we've seen them take in the first round, maybe as a high school guy. We saw them take, I can't think of his name, a shortstop. I'm totally blanking. Well, anyway, shortstop on the...
You don't know, I'm not going to know.
Yeah, shortstop on the Rocket City team. I scouted him. I think I even wrote him up this year. It's been that bad. I should check in my notebook. I'm sure he's there. But fits their profile. They, you know, like guys that have high exit velocity, and they kind of value that over somebody with a launch angle. So this is a guy that's kind of a slasher who uses his run tool. He's a plus-plus runner. And while he's shown some extreme power, power potential. I believe that, like, he is your best combination from college of the hit and power tool, or hit and run tool. So that would be my college guy. Now for the high school guy, it's a guy that I'm familiar with from scouting him this year. And it's funny, at first I wanted to just call him Henry Ford because of the, you know, whatever. But I got over that after, like,
I almost
the first
typed
time.
That. I'm not going to lie.
I know. It's hard. But his name's Harry Ford, and he's actually a very interesting guy. He was drafted as a college or a catcher and a first or outfielder. I'm sorry. I'm really messing up here. I keep on looking at
you're
the
good, man.
Googly guy there, and it's just too hard. I mean,
AJ,
catch it.
Your
I get
fault.
Like, confused.
Which one?
It's all your fault.
One.
There's multiple. Yeah.
But anyway, Ford is a guy that I primarily scouted his defense this year. I was assigned him with the organization that I work, and they wanted an evaluation of his catching and getting video on his catching. But what I got to see was a very explosive athlete. He's like a 5'9", like spark plug looking player who looks like the lead, like he plays like that 6'2" lean outfielder. He has somewhere between plus and double plus running tool. I called it a plus run tool. I had one of the best times I've ever had from a guy from the right-handed batter's box home to third base. He ended up sub 12.5. And put that in context, Byron Buxton's the only guy that from the right-hand batter's box that I've ever had sub 11 or sub 12. So we're talking about a really fast guy at a position that you're not really used to seeing. I think he sticks at catcher, but I think that he's a guy that ends up being a dual eligibility type guy to save his legs, because his legs are such a asset to him. I comped him. A lot of people comp him to Russell Martin. I thought that was unfair because I never thought Martin was as good of an athlete as this guy. And while, you know, searching for a comp on him, it was very difficult. But like I could see him, and don't, I'm not comping him here. I'm just saying that this is the only scenario that I've seen in my history of baseball life, which is 41 years. So minus five. So 36 years of my 41 years is what the Astros did with Craig Biggio. This is a kid that has, you know, plus run, has a hit tool. I'm not saying he's Craig Biggio. Craig Biggio is a Hall of Fame player.
Oh, I'm quoting you on that one.
Never. Nope. I got quoted once on something like that, I said was he had, but that's how unique this kid is. This kid has a very unique profile. And, something that we don't ever really see, since they announced him as an outfielder, if the athletic ability is what it is, he's going to probably be an outfielder when he's older, when he matures. But again, just like Applegarth said, taking advantage of the eligibility for Donaldson for those first few years, first year, that might be something with Ford, kind of like what a few of us did with Kyle Schwarber. We're talking about a catcher that's going to, maybe with dual eligibility, that's going to get us stolen bases and a good hit tool, as opposed to what Schwarber did, which was unbelievable power out of the catching position.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great comp, too, and another great, dual eligibility reference there, too. I wasn't even thinking about Schwarber, but that's one of the reasons so many people went after him, was for that catcher eligibility.
Yeah.
It's easily the tight end of the baseball fantasy world in that there's like a couple of guys that you really care about, and the rest you just stream.
There's two guys that are going to randomly be good. Were super late. Posey was one this year. So who saw that coming back? But we've seen it, year in and year out with both of those. Yeah. I mean, we say it all the time, but
let's compare these two kind of, take the hybrid from this and go with the best power speed guys. That you're thinking here. And we got a guy from the Marlins and a guy from the Rockies.
Yeah, I'll hit the guy with the Marlins first. He was the guy that fell the most in the draft. Khalil Watson, North Carolina prep player. And when we're talking about falling in this draft, a lot of people that are observers understand that this slot game is going on. So essentially, each team has an allocated slot that they can spend on players. It's not saving money. Like, they didn't save money with the Pirates with Henry Davis. They just allocated their money differently. So Watson fell in this draft because he, I guess didn't fit the team's, strategy for the rest of the draft. Cause you're filling, essentially 10 guys in the first 10 rounds with that allocated slot. So you've got to be very careful with how you spend your money. So in my eyes, the Marlins got a complete steal. And Watson's a lot like a player that's on their major league roster right now. And I think everybody, sometimes I call it lazily throws out of comp, but watching this guy, the only guy I thought of was Jazz Chisholm. This is the sort of profile that I would imagine Jazz was at this age. Granted, Jazz was an international signee from the Bahamas. It's a little different. But Khalil, has that unbelievable exit velocity coupled with the launch angle. And he gets to his power really well in his swing. He we're talking about a guy that has the potential of getting up to 70 grade power. I don't think he has the greatest power tool in this draft. And I don't think we discussed any of those guys. I think Brady House is that guy, but there's some other considerations there with him that doesn't have him on any of these lists or so I don't remember putting him on any. Yeah, I didn't put him on any of these lists. That's good.
I'm reading that he could actually move to outfield.
He could. He's that good of an athlete. He is a tremendous athlete. So, and I mean, that's what we said about Chisholm too. And to go to another guy from another team, Vidal Brujan. I mean, we said the same thing about him. Yeah. And we've seen Brujan move all over the place now.
Yeah.
I mean, he's like he's going to be like the Rays utility player for years to come. I mean, he's going to play a different position every day. I mean, that guy, and in that one dynasty league, that's the one guy I've said that's untouchable because I want to take advantage of all of that for as many years as I
can. And when he actually comes up and stays up, he's going to be so good.
Oh, yeah, he is. He is. He's a little overmatched in that first little taste. But I'm okay with that. He got me a stolen base, and that's what I desperately needed. So, anyway, you know, Watson's that kind of player that if you're a Jazz Chisholm fan or if you're a guy that, you know, missed out on him 4 or 5 years from now, you know, the Marlins have shown, even though they picked him up halfway in his development, to have already developed a player like Watson in Chisholm. So, like, this is a category that you're, you know, really focused on. While there's a lot of high upside guys that the Marlins have missed on, it hasn't been missed. These aren't guys that they went out and acquired. They acquired Chisholm. They didn't, you know, another regime, the previous regime prior to the Derek Jeter regime, acquired all these other toolsy guys. So, you know, they're getting the combinations that work best for them now for their player development. Yeah. I love this pick. This is probably the biggest value pick of the whole draft. And then going on to my other pick for this category is a guy that I'm not really enamored with, to be honest. And in a future question, he'll come up again. But Benny Montgomery, who went to the Rockies. I'm not a big fan of Rockies drafts. And I'm interested to see what the turnover in that organization might happen with those. You know, they're on an interim GM now, and who knows who they hire, how that's going to play out. But they love to target the power tool. And in this case, they got power and speed, just like Zach Veen last year, who's a top 50 prospect now, a guy that I was a little hesitant about during the draft last year and during our show last year. I thought some of my colleagues and competitors had him ranked a little too high to start out with. And, you know, I still believe they had him a little too high. I think that he's performed a little better. I think that there's a lot of swing and miss there. I think there's more swing and miss with Benny Montgomery than I did with Veen. So I'm very bearish with Montgomery. But I've got to acknowledge that he has the same sort of power potential as the guys that we've discussed so far, like Watson and, you know, I mentioned Brady House. The thing is and he also can steal bases as well. I think that we're talking about a guy that has plus running skills. My fear with this guy is that he's going to strike out a ton. And the Rockies have, you know, struck out a lot recently on profiles just like this.
Yeah, that's a killer for leagues, more for points leagues. Obviously, you know, roto leagues aren't looking at strikeouts, but that hurts the average. So, you know, it'll hurt you there. But, you know, in a points league, if you're in one of those leagues that dings you for strikeouts, man, he's a guy that you're going to want to stay away from. I mean, Aaron Judge was that guy for me in my dynasty league I used to be in. I mean, I loved his upside and, you know, reap the benefits from it, but he would murder me with the case. And it's like, dude, come on. Like you're bashing homers left and right. That's awesome. But you got to figure this out. Like, and I ended up trading him. Ultimately, I was like, you know what? I'm going to make him someone else's problem. And I did. And I had more benefits and not having to worry about that. So moving into the K realm, though, the guys that are throwing those Ks, the best pitchers that we have here. We got about five guys listed here that we like, so, or that you like. So let's start it off with draft pick number two.
Yes, the best pitcher, best floor of any of the pitchers that we're going to be talking about today is Jack Leiter. There's upside for an SP2 outcome, possibly, maybe even a little higher than that. But the kid is unbelievably mature for his young age. He was a sophomore, draft eligible sophomore at Vanderbilt, and the Rangers took him, which, you know, the chatter going into the draft was that he wanted the Red Sox to pick him, and at worst, the Mets to pick him at 10. But I feel like young
– at worst, the Mets.
Well, I mean, that's – I mean, what we're looking at.
Does he want to get
here,
hurt? Because that's what the Mets do to their pitchers. Does he want to just – like, yeah, seriously?
But you got to also understand the Mets have done well with similar profile
pitchers. Oh, I get it. I get it. Yeah, they've got phenomenal pitching. They just always get hurt. This is
just because they're all hurt right now. I'm sure somebody got hurt tonight. No Stroman pitch. I haven't looked at whether he made it through. I just cringe every time. I'm a recovering Mets fan. I'll probably be a Mets fan again when my contract with this org runs out.
Now that you say that, I've got to look. He is shutting out the Braves.
Okay.
Or no, he didn't pitch tonight. No, he pitched tomorrow.
It was a doubleheader, man.
Oh, I got to look at the first one. He lost 2-0, went 5 innings. Not great. Anyway.
Yeah. But anyway, it's your normal Met thing. But like that's where he was seeing himself, mostly because of money. Mostly because of his dad's familiarity with the Mets organization and that kind of thing. If anybody doesn't know, Jack Leiter's uncle is Mark Leiter, former major league player, and his his cousin's Mark Leiter Jr. He might have had a famous father too, named
Al.
Maybe.
Just maybe.
Al Leiter. I don't know.
I might have heard of him.
Yeah. Through his slider, kind of like a maybe? Cut. Yeah. I mean, he was a decent pitcher. He pitched a shutout. in a wild card game for the Mets one time. I remember that. Beautiful, beautiful game. One of the worst athletes I've ever seen on the mound. But Jack is a wonderful athlete. A phenomenal athlete. It really shows in his delivery. His delivery is a little unorthodox. Very athletic delivery, gets the most out of his frame. He's not the biggest pitcher in the world. He's also a guy, I don't know how familiar you guys are with vertical approach angle. It's something that I really focused on the Baseball HQ website today or this year so far. And it's also something that like a lot of much smarter writers have covered this year. But it's essentially something that you can measure, and I'm going to butcher this. I'm a little buzzed, so I apologize for this. But a vertical approach angles, you know, is a measurement that can measure where a fastball will work best at as it approaches the zone. So we see a lot of vertical approach angles closer to zero. They're usually in the negative numbers, and this vertical approach angle from Leiter is close to zero. And what that does is he's a guy that succeeds throwing fastballs at a flatter plane. Okay. So a bigger negative number, like a negative 10 would be, negative 8 would be a guy that is best at a lower vertical angle that the ball comes in. So you're talking about a sinker baller. Okay.
Okay.
Would be like a minus 8 type guy. The guys that are up in the zone and that are staying above the hitter's plane right now have exceptional vertical approach angles. They are, usually going to be guys that have studied this and that are really tech savvy. But more and more, you're seeing pitchers drafted. Ryan Cusack, who got drafted by the Braves this year, is one of those guys. Jordan Wicks, who we'll be talking about a little later, is a guy that has a fastball efficiency and a vertical approach angle that is something teams want. Because right now we have all the hitters concentrating on launch angle.
Right.
We want these high pitches and we want them to ride. We want them to create this riding action. So Leiter has one of the highest efficiency fastballs in this draft. And he throws it hard. It usually sits in the mid-90s. So like that, along with all of his secondaries, which are above average to better pitches, make him a very, very, very high floored player with ceiling left. He's a guy that I believe, you know, we're going to see more and more pitchers like this until hitting adjusts to the higher plane fastballs. But like, you know, a guy, for instance, a guy who performed, you mentioned the college stats, who dominated this year, but fell in the draft to the Tigers in the second, or in the competitive balance round, Ty Madden. He's kind of the opposite of it. He doesn't really, Texas, where he came from, is kind of behind the cutting edge with these type of pitchers. So, schools like Mississippi State, where Bednar came from, Wake Forest, where Cusack came from, and Vanderbilt, where Leiter and Rocker came from, their pitching labs are on the cutting edge of technology. So I believe Madden fell because the beliefs out there that the way he currently pitches is not necessarily going to be conducive to today's game. He's trying to, you know, for years, the tall guys, we kind of call them, you know, taking advantage of a downward plane, but we've realized that you have to be fine with that downward plane. You can't miss. And those guys, and that's because they don't have natural plane on their fastball. They're just throwing it downhill, essentially. And so that falls right into the launch angle world right now.
Yeah.
Where guys are coming in underneath instead of, you know, when we were growing up, we were told to go like this, right? We were told to go like this and then kind of chop down and then back up. Right. They're starting down here already.
Yeah, they're coming down like, faster and then up. Yeah. Yeah.
So guys like Leiter, guys like Jordan Wicks, who we'll be talking about very shortly, are guys that have, you know, either their colleges or their, you know, them on their own, or through instruction, have really, you know, kicked off this whole vertical approach and taken advantage of staying above these swing planes and dominating. And that's what makes Leiter so good, is his fastball efficiency is superb. And that's even saying, like, earlier in the year, he wasn't, when he was pitching that no-hitter was not one of his best games. He in the sense of staying above the swing planes, he was just missing bats everywhere. But against better competition, he wasn't able to sustain that, and then he made that adjustment and was a lot better. So I know, long-winded answer, but no, like, I wanted to get that all out there. And while I didn't do the best job, I can blame this empty AVL IPA, which reminds me, I'm gonna open another beer.
Right.
Yes,
we already opened up our second. I'm on to something, AJ, that you
I'm
gave
just,
me.
I'm just, I'm. It's a.
You,
it's
you
a
gave
growler.
Me this one.
I can't even.
I finally.
Oh, nice. Bat
yeah,
squatch.
The bat squatch. It's all right. I gave it 3.5. It's not the best, but it's good.
I'm on Sweetwater Hazy IPA from Atlanta.
Ah, good stuff.
It's good.
All right, so let's talk about Kumar Rocker, who is a guy that we saw some filthy film from all over the place, especially from the Pitching Ninja guys there on your hat. I saw lots of clips with him on Twitter. He's a fun guy to watch. He's very electric and very animated on the mound, too, which is fun. But what do you think about him getting picked 10th by the Mets, which actually shocked me, him falling that far?
It was a good selection by the Mets. And you know, it was a team that made sense. There was a lot of rumors going into the draft that he was going to be a Kansas City Royal at, I think, number 7. And the Royals were pretty heavy, along with the Nationals, who picked after the Mets, were two of the teams that were had the heaviest interest in his high school draft year. He's a kid that came from a Athens, Georgia area school. His dad is a former football player named Tracy Rocker, who is also a coach, defensive line coach. And that's why he came out of that place, that part of Georgia, is because his dad was the line coach at Georgia. He was line coach at Tennessee. I think he might be with Carolina now. I'm not 100% sure. You know, the same like Leiter, you know, athletic bloodlines, in that family. Rocker in high school came out just incredible his senior year. Hamstring injury kind of, hurt his stock a little. I thought he was throwing about 90% of maybe even 85% his last start of the year, which was a playoff game against 2020 third round pick Cole Wilcox. It was one of the best days of scouting I've ever had. Because I also saw another draft pick later in the day. But anyway, he's a guy that at times has shown brilliance and has been a GIF monster or GIF, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, it's supposed to be GIF. I call it GIF.
I call it GIF too.
I refuse to call it the peanut butter.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. But the thing is like through all that dominance, whether it's been in college or in high school, there's been parts of his career where he hasn't been as dominant. And, it was a harder evaluation because, the moments of dominance were also, there was some, less than dominance. And we kind of saw some of that in the College World Series this year. First against
walking guys a lot.
Yeah. And his velocity was down. His stuff wasn't crisp whatsoever. There's a part of me that, the part of me says that he's the highest upside pitcher in this draft of the college guys. He has the best chance at the SP1 ranking. But then again, the inconsistency we've seen throughout the last few years, we didn't get to see in 2020 because the season got called, and we saw it early in 2019. And then he became dominant. So, he hasn't put together a season where we've seen him at his best. We've seen him lose velocity at various times. I think that's why he fell. I think he was a top five pick, even with the slot money in consideration. But I think he fell to where he fell. Not necessarily because of slot. It's just because you can't really, stake a claim to, is this guy really what he is? I think he's in a great place. There's a lot of power pitchers in New York, whether they're injured or not. But there's guys that he can learn from, especially conditioning-wise. He's a well-conditioned guy. He might even be too muscular, to be honest with you.
Big dude. 6'5", like 250.
He's 250, a big
6'5", 250, man. He's big.
He was a big dude in college or high school. And now, he's just, I think it's a great fit for him. It's an organization that has turned power pitchers into contributors. I think that, I like him better on the Royals. I don't know what the Royals were doing with their seventh pick. for a team that is, not really competing. It looked like they were drafting for 4 or 5 years from now when they need players quickety split. I thought that Rocker was seven, and I was very surprised when he wasn't.
I know that many, many of Mets fans were jumping up and down when they got Rocker. As they probably should have been. The dude's electric, but yeah, there are concerns. I did watch a little bit of that a few of the Vanderbilt games that in the College World Series where, he was shaky, man. It was I was expecting dominance, and I'm this isn't what I was thinking. I never seen him pitch on TV, and I'm what? Who's this guy? this isn't that good. I'm just looking at the gifts and thinking he's going to be awesome, and he should have been, but hopefully he can get the command and control, and hopefully he can stay healthy. Obviously two big concerns for him. But the next guy here you listed down was Jackson Jobe. He got drafted by the Tigers. Give us a little take on him.
Well, I think he's the highest upside guy in the whole draft. I mean, we're talking about a prep guy. Last year we talked about Mick Abel, who was an Oregon prep who the Phillies drafted. Phillies went and drafted Painter this year out of Florida, out of Calvary Christian High School. Mm-hmm. I don't know what the Phillies are doing either. Just
that makes
say that real quick. But I love this.
Sorry, AJ.
Tigers. Sorry. I love
it
this.
Makes two of us.
Yeah. I love this pick from the Tigers. And I think that they got the highest upside pitcher. Let me get to my notes here because I don't want to miss out on this. He's obviously not the one I'm the most familiar with. I relied heavily on my evaluation through a few videos from the different prospect showcases this year. I also relied on some scouting reports from some people in Oklahoma. Luckily, I have some good contact there. What I really enjoyed about him, he's a guy who utilizes that flatter plane on his fastball. It's a easy velocity. We're talking about a guy that's sitting 94, 96, and staying above the bats, the bat plane with a rising fastball. The slider is probably, the video I saw on the slider is probably the best prep slider that I've ever seen. And the ability to manipulate the spin is elite for somebody that age. I'm not saying it's elite pitch. It won't, who knows if it ends up there, but for a guy that's 18 years old, to be able to have that feel of spin and to be able to manipulate the spin depending on what you need out of the pitch, and to also be able to command it, something that I'm just saying you very rarely see. It's a two-plane breaker, and that vertical drop is scary. The changeup is low to mid 80s. It has deceptive arm side fading action. I didn't really see any tumble in my looks, but it looks to at least be an average major league pitch at projection.
Can you explain what tumble is?
Okay, so our fade is just like fade. Okay, so you start out with. Essentially, the changeup is like this, and then it will fade. Yep. And if he's a right-handed,
I know what you mean.
Okay.
Yeah.
Tumble, it goes like, you see that?
So it goes down and curves?
It drops. I'm doing the same fading action, but it also drops.
Okay.
Yeah. So you're getting that arm. So I didn't see the tumble in any of those things, but we're talking about an 18-year-old and who's a good athlete who repeats his delivery exceptionally well. Like, Mick Abel was a guy that, we hadn't seen before. And then this year we saw a guy that might be better than him. And so I really like him. I think that, I think that he has the greatest upside of any pitcher in this draft. And that's Rocker included. I said that he was the greatest collegiate upside in the draft. I really believe the Tigers did a phenomenal job with this draft pick. This is kind of their bread and butter right now is developing pitchers, and hopefully that continues with Job.
Yeah, I think it would be good. All right, so the last two guys here, we got Gavin Williams with Cleveland from ECU, and Jordan Wicks. We've already alluded to him. So real quick, just speed through for Williams. What do you like on Williams? And then let us know your thoughts on Wicks.
He's a guy with some injury concerns, some injury issues throughout his time in school. There was a finger injury that has some concern. He's a guy that has a high fastball strike rate, and that's something that we kind of look for. I mean, Leiter had one, it's something that we track, at Baseball HQ. I say we, like everybody does the same things I do. They don't. Fastball strike percentage is a big deal for me, and this guy also has the secondary stuff that could play it up. Like, I really feel like he's – after Rocker has the greatest up, after Rocker and Leiter has the greatest upside of SPs, starting pitchers in this draft. And I had him tied with, that was not quietly.
Good try again, AJ. You're failing tonight, AJ. That is ridiculous.
The way that you do that is you ask your question, AJ, while you're opening
what's,
it. You're
what's
like,
funny?
Hey,
What's funny is Joe was trying Gavin to be Williams. All super quiet about his. I was like, no.
What's funny is you're down. You're down here with yours, and I wasn't trying to be quiet with mine. I cracked it open. You're deep. Like down here under the mic, like bonk. Get
that. It's a powerful ceramic growl. Okay. What do you want from me?
All right, okay. Let's finish up.
I just feel like you could have segued. You could have asked your question, and as you asked the question, just pop. And it would have been like we could have put some sort of graphic there. All right. Anyway, Williams is I'm through Williams, and Jordan Wicks is a guy high efficiency fastball, riding fastball. What I like about him is there's a floor of an SP4, SP5 starter, but there is some upside. I like him a little better than some of the other guys like McGreevy that got picked around this pick. I feel like from maybe the Bednar pick all the way to the Tommy Mace pick in the second round, a lot of these starting pitchers were interchangeable with different degrees of, whether your preference was one guy or the other. My preference here was for Williams and for Wicks. And Wicks, especially with his slider and his changeup combination, the changeup is a plus pitch. Slider has the possibility of being an above average pitch. I think that he can get up to an SP3, upside if everything works out with that slider and he continues to progress with his fastball and with his changeup.
All right. So that's what we've got for like the category type players. So to finish things off here, we got a couple more questions. The first one is, rip through your top 12 overall for a Dynasty Baseball first-year rookie draft.
Okay. That's going to be easy because I have it written down here.
Perfect.
Henry Davis is actually number one. I would say 1A and 1B might be Marcelo Meyer. But the way I looked at this was Davis is the best college bat, the closest ready college bat. And I'm a big fan of targeting those guys. Of course, if you're in more of a rebuild, of course, Meyer would be your 1A and maybe Davis might be your 1B, or maybe it will be Lawler or Watson. Okay. Number three, I have Watson. I'm a Jazz Chisholm fan. I love what he brings to the game. Watson has a chance to be a better Jazz Chisholm. I think that he might actually hit for a little more average than Chisholm if everything works out. I have Lawler 4, Leiter 5, Kowser 6. I think that, he brings an interesting mix to fantasy. Frelick and Rocker are 7 and 8. A guy that we didn't talk about, Matt McClain, who dealt with a finger injury, got drafted by the Reds with UCLA. He was a guy that Arizona took in the 20th something round in 2018. And he's a guy that has a hit tool. And, it's something that like the Reds don't necessarily have. They strike out so much that, like,
they do.
This might be a guy that they can, build to give their lineup a little more help.
Seems like they tried to go that route with Jonathan India too. Like he seems like he's like a much better hitter than the rest of the guys on their team.
And we they're all swing and miss guy. We saw what happened to him in the playoffs last year against the Braves, where they would just kept on waiting for a 3-run home run and never got two guys on base to get that 3-run home run.
Right.
So like, that's a weakness for them. Number 10, I would have Brady House, who we've talked about, probably the biggest power bat in this draft. And then, 11, 12, I had like about five different guys, and I ended up going with Gavin Williams because I like his upside as a starter. If you notice, I don't have Jobe in there. I'm a little, my thing with prep arms is I'm not a big first round guy with prep arms. And then number 12, that's where I have Jobe, actually. So I do have him as a first-round pick. But that's
not an 11. You're 12.
Yeah, my 12.
So you're playing a 10-team draft. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, I guess in 10-team drafts, they're not first-rounders. But that's kind of how I feel, is like I'm a little more apprehensive, even if he's the most polished prep arm that I've seen. I'm still, you know, we know the history. Guys don't, you know, so many roadblocks. I mean, you know, we saw Ethan Hankins this year look like a stud in spring training, and then he needs Tommy John surgery. So, like, it's those type of things that just scare me off of prep arms.
Yeah, it's tough, especially because you got to wait for those guys to develop, even though they have so much talent coming out of high school. You know, they still have to develop tons. There's so many years where just a lot can go wrong, or they just don't develop, period. Like, we've seen it time and time again. But so you gave us your top 12. Give us a few guys that you think are going to go, you know, easily going to be second, third, you know, round dynasty league draft for first round draft picks, that you are all in on for that value at least.
I'm a fan of Trey Sweeney, who the Yankees drafted. I think 21st was kind of a surprise. Now I don't think his upside is where some people have it projected, but I think he's a very safe bet. And in a climate right now where, you know, especially with college bats, we've had a lot of guys not perform up to expectations. Sweeney, in a lesser level, performed, but then when the lights were the brightest, also did really well against better competition. So I have him as my, you know, second round target. I think that, you know, a second round pick that might be in the second, third round is a guy that I've talked about too, is Judd Fabian. I mean, the power potential there is like Brady House's. I think that there's a hit tool in there. I think he'll hit enough to not be a total, you know, total weak BA guy or weak on base percentage guy. I think this guy will get on base enough and hit for a high enough average that that should work itself out.
I was told to ask you about Judd. Granted, it was from a Red Sox fan, but you know, it sounded like, I think you mentioned his name earlier, that like
he was a guy
who kind of dropped because he didn't perform his senior year or whatever year.
Yeah, it was his sophomore year, and he just had a very, very lackluster campaign. He had a high strikeout rate, which we know the Red Sox aren't afraid of. We see Bob Kalbach.
Those AL East ballparks, man, you don't care.
Yeah, they don't care.
Get a hold of one, they're out.
But I think that, you know, his. While I was scouting Jack Leiter for our podcast, I watched him against Florida, and Fabian had a huge game against him. And like, you started seeing the glimpses of what we thought was going to be his sophomore year, his draft eligible year. And I really feel like getting into pro camp, he's going to carry that momentum over. And I feel like he has the potential of being a riser of some sorts, especially if he debuts this year.
Yeah, sounds like it. So
yeah.
All right. So
finish it off here, AJ.
With all that said, the last question we got here then is, obviously there's guys you'd like to draft, and then there's guys you want to avoid in rookie drafts. So who are a couple players that you're avoiding in the rookie drafts that people are going to just pick just because they were drafted early?
Well, I already mentioned Benny Montgomery. I just don't think he's going to hit enough. I think the tools are there, you know. And in my leagues, I know which managers are going to select him most likely. And if it's a manager that I believe that I have good a trading history with or something like that, he might be a guy that I still target. And use for later, as I mentioned with Marco Luisiano earlier and some of the other guys. But he's a profile that does attract certain managers too. Another guy that I'm just not really on, and it's mostly there's a few red flags with Colson Montgomery. We're just going to pick on all the Montgomerys, the prep guy from Indiana. And Colson is a guy that you either really love or you really don't. And my thing with him is he was drafted by the White Sox. The White Sox were absolutely enamored with him. And also the Mets were, too. And, there was rumors that they were going to cut an underslot deal with him had Rocker not fallen where he fell to. So, like, this was a guy that that had interest throughout the first round. He's on the older side. We tend to see older prep guys, and he's older than 19. He's actually a few months old, older than some of the guys that we considered old. And the White Sox have never really had success with this type of profile. Just to get to maybe another guy that I would have a hard time considering would be Sam Bachman, who's the Angels pick. He's a guy that, like, we haven't really figured out whether he's a reliever or a starter. I actually like the pick for the Angels, because they need almost immediate pitching if they're going to do something during the Trout
era,
Ohtani era. They're going to need some immediate help, whether that's in the pen or whether that's a starting pitcher. I'm on the side that he's a reliever, and I don't think he has that dominant pitch that really makes him a dominant closer type. I think that he's a really good high leverage guy. Maybe, a setup man, maybe even a closer, but not like a top closer.
Sounds like maybe a sinker and slider are good, but other than that,
the delivery is very, very
bizarre.
Very bizarre. And, like, it's hard to project that kind of stuff into a starting pitching profile. I it's funny. You can like a pick because of the team that picked them.
Mm-hmm.
And, also the Angels picked like 20 pitchers.
But it's not a fantasy profile.
But it's not a fantasy profile. And, I had him ranked, within that range of those guys that got picked between the 14th and the second round Tommy Mace pick. I'm not quite sure which pick that was by the Indians. But, like, he fit into that profile. But I think that his upside is as a reliever, and I think he could be an absolute dominant one too. I just don't see the one pitch that really carries the profile. Yeah. Kind of like Emmanuel Clase of the Indians, who has that one pitch that really makes him dominant, and like Kimbrel in his prime, and Jansen in his prime. They had that one pitch that was just exceptional.
Well, they did save a million. 1.1 million by signing him, picking him at
nine. To sign more pitchers. Hey,
so that's fine. That's what's working right now. So, and I think a lot of teams are catching on to that, it feels like. So, all right, man. Well, that's all we've got. So before we let you bounce for the night, why don't you remind everybody where they can find your stuff, man?
All right. Well, there's a long list, but we're going to keep it short. The Eyes Have It podcast, which is available on Twitter. It's from Baseball HQ. We just started it. We're on episode 11 this week, which is going to be on our top 50 midseason prospects. I host this with Brent Hershey. We're also going to cover some Pirates prospects. Nice. And guess what? This week is a two-article week at Baseball HQ for our subscribers. The podcast is available to anybody, by the way. But the articles will be on Pirates guys. I'm always at the park. I'm also at home scouting guys, and I'm really exhausted right now. And this beer has gone to my head.
You were telling me you had a long day before this, so I appreciate you coming on for sure and hanging out with us. We always love
having you on. Always make time for you guys. Always make time for you guys.
You are one of our favorites for sure. We will let you go, get some sleep, and
we'll see. You can see my eyes there.
Yeah, we will see you again for sure in a few months. Baseball prospect time again.
Yeah, hopefully we don't. That podcast competition. Hopefully we don't face.
I know, right? I know. I don't want to lose you guys again.
I think
we're gonna get smashed.
Yeah, if that happens. I mean,
all right, yeah. I'm gonna vote for HQ. I mean,
I don't. That wasn't close.
Tough call, but
wasn't that funny that I was gonna be on
you were the on
podcast that week. That was
the same week. Yeah.
The exact same week.
And I was like, I can't promote you guys. I'm sorry. I don't.
I
mean,
we didn't stand a chance. You don't understand.
Patrick is just one of the nicest guys. I could not go against him.
As soon as I saw the matchup, I went, oh my gosh. Yeah, I didn't say it. We didn't say a chance.
Somebody's watching the show because they're seeing it.
But hey, I am just actually honored to be on that show because I will be perfectly honest. Like, we're more of a football show than we are baseball.
Yeah.
We do plenty of baseball, but we are way more into football and we're way more successful with football. But, you know, we bring guests on like you and a bunch of our baseball writers to help us out. And so, you know, I guess that means something. I'm grateful for being in it, and I hope we're in it again next year. I would, you know, love to build the audience and whatever. If we go against you guys again, we'll take the loss.
Yeah. Well, it might be the junior. It might be us. So we have two now. So we'll
oh see. Man, you guys are gonna knock us out of it like completely. They're gonna put both of you guys in and just shove us out.
Yeah.
All right, man. Well, have a good night, man.
All right.
And we'll do it again soon. See ya.
Cheers, right, my friend.
Cheers.
All right. AJ, I think we've about had it. I'm pretty beat myself. So
I have finished a growler tonight. So
holy cow. That's a good one. That's a good night for you, man. Thanks for Chris for coming on. Love having him here. Phenomenal information. I know we had a bunch of guys from the Slack channel on Fantasy Six Pack commenting about how good of a job Chris was doing and all the great information. So kudos to him. And I think that's it for the night. See you guys on Thursday when we are back with our normal.
Randall might be gone. We'll see. We'll see.
We'll see. When we're back with our football division previews. So see you then. Peace.